everybody, and welcome back to New Books in Jewish Studies. I'm Jason Shulman. We've got a great show for you today. My guest is Maud Mandel, Dean of the College at Brown University, here to talk about her new book, Muslims and Jews in France, History of a Conflict, published in 2014 by Princeton University Press. Maud, welcome to New Books in Jewish Studies.
Thanks so much.
Well, we're glad to have you. So, Maud, what's been the standard story about what's been going on between Muslims and Jews in France since about 2000? And what's missing from that story, in your view?
Well, as your question indicates, in 2000, there was an outbreak of violence in some of the areas of large urban cities, Paris and other areas, where there were Muslim and Jewish residents, often not in the center of the cities, but in the working class neighborhoods in its surrounding areas. Much of the story of some of those conflicts that have come and gone rather periodically since then has been that I would say it has a two-pronged, there are two parts of the story. The first part is that Muslims and Jews have sort of perennially had an ongoing conflict across time, depending on who's telling the story. So that's one version, sort of since the birth of Islam, there's been ongoing tensions between Muslims and Jews. And the other is a far more recent story, which grounds conflict largely in, as an outbreak, completely of the Middle East, which tells a story that Muslims and Jews in France are in conflict because they have taken opposite sides in the Arab or in the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. There is some truth to that story in that conflict and violence waxes and wanes in France since 2000 to a certain degree in connection to events in the Middle East. As your question implied, it also leaves out two really important and related aspects of the story. The first is a historical component grounded in where sort of the history of where Muslims and Jews come from in France, which is French North Africa, and the decolonization process. So the history of that relationship is really missing from the story, and what happened over time to bring these populations occasionally into conflict with one another. Sort of a recognition that conflict has only been one part of a much more variegated and complex relationship that has also stretched back over time and that has been influenced by various changes in the French historical landscape over time.
So why do you think we have failed to take sort of this longer view that you're putting forward? It seems like we're either looking at something that's timeless or something that's based on what's going on in Israel and Palestine. Why are we not looking at the longer story of France?
That's a really good question. I think in some ways it's almost always the case when there are controversial moments of the day and media is looking for very quick and rapid explanations to very complex problems that we overlook history. I think that's a common complaint of my discipline, actually, that the complexities of the historical process get left out very often. Also, I think, though, some of that has to do with the particularities of this story, which really since World War II has been telling the story of Muslims and Jews writ large as one of conflict that has really been shaped almost entirely by the emerging nationalisms that have shaped the Middle East. And again, that's not a wrong story. There's a lot that's right about that story, but it's incomplete. And I think it's particularly incomplete in a context like France, where there's another several layers to the story that really come out of French history and that are disconnected almost entirely from the Middle East as it was defined by Zionism and Pan-Arab nationalism and Palestinian nationalism.
Right. Well, so the book is less about, you know, past conflicts between Muslims and Jews, but more so about the story of how conflict emerges, what you call narratives of conflict. What do you mean by that?
Well, one of the arguments I really try to make in the book is that while anybody who's picking up the book today, and the book is called History of a Conflict, so anybody picking up the book today sort of thinks of these two populations as inevitably in conflict with each other, that this is a story that that was inevitable because of what has happening in the Middle East, and also is sort of all we imagine and think about when we think about these two populations. We think about them in conflict. But one of the points of my analysis, or really my starting off point, was that actually there was quite a bit that connected the Muslim and Jewish populations of France, that really made conflict a part of the story of their relationship, but by no means the only part, and sometimes the much less interesting story. So the large majority of the Muslim population in France came from French North Africa, mostly of Algerian, but also of Moroccan and Tunisian descent. And while the Jewish population has a component made up of Ashkenazic Jews from Eastern Europe, another very large percentage, more than half, also comes from French North Africa and also largely from Algeria. And that means that these populations, as they migrated to France, shared almost as much as what divided them, if not more so, in terms of cultural connections, linguistic backgrounds, the shared experience of being migrants to France, being religious minorities in a Catholic country. So they had lots of things that linked them. And so my story is interested in helping us understand why we have come to think of these two populations as perennially and inevitably in conflict, when in fact the story is more complex than that.
Right. So, yeah, it's interesting to see there are all these similarities between the two groups. But over time, we see the creation of categories, right? Why do some people find it useful to homogenize the two groups?
Well, I mean, you know, politics very often simplifies. And so it is useful for political activist purposes very often, or to motivate groups to simplify heterogeneity into homogeneous categories. So that's probably the simplest answer to your question. I think the more maybe specific answer with regard to these particular populations is that, and the book traces this, at particular moments in French history, and I focus on kind of three key moments: the decolonization of French North Africa, the 1968 student uprising in France, and the 1980s experiments in multiculturalism. At all of these moments, there were groups of political actors, journalists, activists, social commentators, journalists, folks who sought to tell the story, an emerging story of or recount Muslim and Jewish relations, and very often for reasons that have to do with their the particular moments I study, there are good reasons for homogenizing the population. So if I could just give one example to make this more concrete, in North Africa, as France was pulling out of French North Africa in the late 1950s and early 1960s, there are, I argue, three groups that really start to talk about North African Jews as a category. There was nobody really who socially identified as a North African Jew. There were Algerian Jews and Tunisian Jews and Moroccan Jews, and even some of those Jews identified more with a particular region of those areas. But I argue that international Jewish agencies, such as the World Jewish Congress and the Joint Distribution Committee, started to talk about imperiled Jews in North Africa very often because they themselves, these international Jewish organizations, had been fighting to save Jews during the Holocaust, and they were very focused on Jews for good reasons as a targeted group. And so they started to see the Jews in North Africa as sort of the next in line of Jews that needed to be saved. So that was kind of one group of actors that started to talk about Jews as a homogenous group. Secondarily was French officials in the region who were trying to keep control of French North Africa and who saw any sign of agitation or political upheaval, whether it was by Jews or Muslims, as something to be controlled. And so they start to string together what are really isolated pockets of unrest into a much larger North African story. That's not the only thing they talked about when they talked about Jews, but we begin to see out of some of the French political quarters, groups of people who are colonial officials who start talking about a Jewish problem in North Africa. And then lastly are many Muslim national groups, and this is a rather complicated story because many of the Muslim North African nationalist groups in Algeria, Morocco, and Tunisia often publicly made the case that Jews from their region were very much a part of that region, so that Algerian Jews were Algerian first and foremost, Tunisian Jews were Tunisian, Moroccan, et cetera, really as part of their nationalist appeal that people indigenous to the region should support the nationalist movement. But despite that, there were definitely individuals in all of these nationalist movements that also started to talk about Jews as a group who were disloyal to the nationalist cause or supportive of Israel. And so as a result of these three groups, as I sort of loosely defined as groups, we start to have a discourse of homogenization of a very diverse North African Jewish population. And this was one example. There are others in the book, but that show how very complex heterogeneous groups could be broadly characterized into a single narrative group.
Right. And so what was the legacy of, you know, the colonial experience in French North Africa once these individuals moved to France? Was it, you know, psychological, political, institutional? What did they carry with them?
So as the France pulls out of North Africa, and particularly Algeria in 1962, something very interesting happens. Algerian Jews had been declared French citizens at the end of the 19th century, a status that they had lost during World War II and then regained after the war under Vichy. And in 1962, after a period of uncertainty, the French decided that Jews would be categorized as Europeans, like the other French settlers in the region, and they would retain their French citizenship when they left. Whereas Muslims, who'd been granted French citizenship as part of various concessions to try to hold the empire together, were stripped of that citizenship. So in the moment of decolonization, Jews were categorized as Europeans and French, and Muslims were characterized as Algerians and hence as immigrants. And that meant that although many, many Jews migrated to France and many Muslims migrated to France, they migrated as different categories. And that meant their integration into France was different. So you asked about what did they carry with them. So one of the things they carried with them was really different statuses in the French nation state. Jews as, and again, I'm speaking mostly of Algerian Jews here, but that was the large majority of Jews who came. They carried their citizenship with them, which gave them access to housing, jobs, schooling, whereas the immigrant Muslims who came ended up in the lowest sectors of the French economy, often came into very underprivileged sectors of French economy and society. They also carried, I would argue, different memories of what had happened in North Africa with their departure. So although there were very complex reasons why the Jews were considered French citizens when they left and departed as citizens, this homogenized story is of North African sort of Jewish flight from the region starts to be told as a story of Muslim Jewish conflict. So the psychological story is very much one of Jews being pushed out, even though that's really not how the story unfolds on the ground. Meanwhile, Muslims who come to France very much come after a very divisive war with the French over the future of Algeria and the rest of North Africa, and therefore come very much as suspect migrants into a post-colonial landscape. So their trajectories into the French nation state are quite different.
Mm-hmm. I think one thing that you're saying in the book is that we sometimes find conflict everywhere because, you know, we find it everywhere we look because the archives have sort of a conflict bias. Mm-hmm. Is that right?
Well, yeah. One of the things, when I set out to write this book, it originally had a different title. I think I called it Beyond Antisemitism. And I was interested in that title because I believed going in that that while we were hearing stories of great Muslim antisemitism towards Jews and a lot of Muslim-Jewish conflict, that the story, that if you scratch the surface, you would find far less conflict, precisely because of the shared history that I described. And while part of my book's argument is, in fact, that is true, that there's a lot, that the relations between these two populations are far more diverse than a story of conflict suggests, it's also true that when you're a historian, the methodology you use is to go to archives. And if you go to archives, in the hunt for convivial relationships, they're often hard to find because usually archives are filled with things like police reports and media. Archives are filled with news stories, and news stories tend to drift to stories of conflict. And so, in fact, the archival narrative that is left is not usually of convivial neighbors playing cards in a coffee shop, although that happened all the time, but rather when the police have to rush in after a neighborhood fracas or journalists who come to, you know, on the search after one of those events and tell a story of conflict. And so a scholar has to be quite creative, actually, in order to uncover other kinds of stories under those narratives.
Right. Why does the city of Marseille feature so prominently in the book?
So most of French history is written from Paris. Not all of it, but a lot of French history is written from a very Parisian-centric story. But when you're examining the question of Muslim-Jewish relations in France, one of the things that's interesting is other cities, and particularly for me, the city of Marseille, for a couple of reasons. One is because from a very 21st century perspective, when violence between Muslims and Jews, really Muslims directed at Jews in 2000 and thereafter, began to take place, it happened much less in Marseille. It did happen there, there's no question, but it was it happened less. The incidents were less frequent. And there were a lot of explanations as to why that was the case, but it drew my interest to the city. Secondarily, the city itself has a geographic landscape that's really different from Paris. So it is a French city like Paris, but in Paris and other large French cities, most of the immigrant Muslim immigrant neighborhoods and the descendants of those immigrants live in these working class neighborhoods that surround the center of the city, but they're not in the city proper. But in Marseille, it's actually the center of the city is populated with immigrants and children of immigrants. And for a long time, the very heart of the city was a mixed neighborhood and still has some traces of that to this day. So Muslims and Jews not only lived in the center of the city, but lived in neighborhoods that were mixed. So that was also quite interesting. And then the third reason Marseille was interesting to me is because of its geographic location. It was very much the entry point, particularly in the post-colonial period, for many Muslims and Jews who were arriving there, which meant that some of the conflicts of North Africa and the Middle East played themselves out most dramatically in Marseille. And so it's both a space of this word I keep using of convivial neighborly relationships, where Muslims and Jews work in the same streets and go to the same cafes and even to some of the same butchers and play soccer together in the streets, but also as a site where there is unrest when, for example, the French state decides to support or at least not prevent Jewish migrants from going to Israel to fight in the 1948 war, for example, and Muslim dock workers witnessing this happen and expressing discontent over that. So you have both things playing out in the city.
Right. One thing I think you want to argue in the book is that it's not just events in the Middle East that lead to tensions in Marseille, but sort of a swirling mixture of, you know, global events in the Middle East, national events in France, and then local events in Marseille. So how do we understand that multi-level analysis?
Well, that's really where we are. Conversation started. I was making a case that while the Middle East is certainly a part of the story for understanding Muslim-Jewish relations in France, we can't really understand what happened there without understanding the national story, which is to say French decolonization from North Africa and how that shapes different trajectories of migrants on the ground. In Marseille, for example, while Muslims and Jews do cohabitate in certain key immigrant neighborhoods, initially, very quickly, Jews are able to move out into wealthier middle-class neighborhoods due to housing relocation policies for returning citizens, which often leaves immigrants living in the worst shanty towns, while Jews end up on a more with more socioeconomic mobility. It's not to say the path for Jews was completely easy. There were plenty of difficulties, but relatively speaking, their path into French society, the North African Jewish path, was less challenging. And so that's this national story of these different integrative pathways based on citizenship versus immigrant status. And then the local, which, as I suggest, there's in Marseille, a particular geographic landscape, which puts Jews and Muslims in a couple of key neighborhoods, at least for the first decade or so after they arrive in France, where they're living often in mixed neighborhoods before they go in these separate directions. And that also shapes their relationships on the ground there. And so I'm arguing that if you really want to understand Muslim-Jewish relations in France, you have to understand all three of these layers.
Mm-hmm. You know, what struck me in the book was, as you said, the Jewish community is diverse, the Muslim community is diverse, and a really, really important question is, who speaks for the community? But isn't that the case in the U.S. and Britain and Canada? What is specific about that question to France?
I think, in a way, you're right that who speaks for the community is not specific to France in the sense, right, anywhere you go, somebody is going to speak for the community. But I would say that as a historian, one of the things we're interested in is how context shapes who the actors are who represent a particular group or why a particular set of individuals speaks for a group, say, in a particular moment. So in the French case, over time, this, of course, changes, right? Because we have different groups of people becoming spokesmen for the community at different moments. For example, one of the periods I talk about is 1968, where a group of very radical leftists become involved and active in the surrounding sort of political landscape and end up having a voice in shaping these relationships that wasn't true in other places in the same way. So I think, that the French context helps us understand that a bit.
Right. If we take the long view, as your book does, what can we say have been the successes and what have been the limits of integration for Muslims and Jews in France?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So I'm going to take each one separately for a moment. Let me speak about the Jews. So we've been talking a lot about North African Jews, but of course there are a lot of other Jews in France, and French Jews have a long history in the French state dating back before the French Revolution. There's been dramatic evidence of very successful integration and dramatic evidence of limitations on that integration. So to use the language of your question of the long view, I think if you look at the long view of French Jewish history, the story is one of relatively successful integration with emancipation, with the French Revolution, a 19th century of increasing integration and Frenchification, to make up a word, and Jews playing a very important role in French civil service and government fairly few barriers to inclusion, but then sort of dramatically upset in a few key moments, such as the Dreyfus Affair and the Vichy years, which were obviously very disruptive and an indication of the limitations of French integration for Jews. Since World War II, however, I think one of the things we really noticed about Jews in France is the gradual disappearance. Actually, it's not even that gradual, the almost immediate disappearance of public anti-Semitism in the French mainstream, and the progressive disappearance of any kind of structural inequality towards Jews. So that is to say, education, residency, marital, professional, Jews can, by today, pretty much have full access to French society. That's not to say there's no anti-Semitism. There is bigotry, of course. And there is, obviously, as the launching point for this book, there is conflict in particular neighborhoods and growing discord between directed towards Jews from some of France's Muslim population. But the story of the long-term story of Jewish integration is seems to be towards ever greater integration. Muslims, the story, I think, is not, we're not there yet. The story doesn't start quite as early, but from a French imperial perspective, the relationship of the French states to its Muslim subjects was always hierarchical. Muslims were never, as imperial subjects, had very mixed relationships with the French state. There are some periods and moments where small numbers are able to attain the kind of citizenship that Jews had on mainland France, but mostly that's not the case. And certainly since decolonization, France's relationships to its Muslim minorities is complex. Many are now born in France and absolutely French citizens from a legal standpoint, but there is lots of remaining structure, post-colonial structural racism that shapes their destiny in France. So if you use those same markers of education to good school, access to good schools, ability to move anywhere comfortably and have a sort of economic advancement in the country is much more limited than it is for France's Jewish minorities. And I would root a lot of that in this colonial, post-colonial landscape.
Right. I know historians make really bad prognosticators, and maybe you have some thoughts about why that is. But based on your reading of the last 100 years or so, right now, given the recent events and the tension between the two communities, are we in a new period? Are we in a new period of hostility, or are we in a rough patch?
Well, that's a good way to frame the question for a historian. Historians are poor prognosticators because of the methodology we use and the way we look at for beginnings and endings of periods. So it's good to ask the question in terms of periodization. It is hard to answer that because historians always look at long views. So when you're in the middle of something, it's hard to know if it's a blip or a longer term trajectory. But I have to say my analysis in that book, which ends in 91, with the first Gulf War, suggests, and I think there's additional evidence to suggest that we really are in a bit of a new phase. And the new phase I don't cover in that book because I don't go past 91, but I think the rise of global terrorism has introduced a new element that wasn't part of my story. I would stress heavily that that element only touches a very small percentage of France's Muslim population, but the introduction of that small element into this relationship has had much broader consequences. And it's, at least right now, particularly given when you and I are having this conversation and what's been happening in France over the last year, hard to say that this is just a rough patch. It seems to be a pretty significant shift in the way we talk about Muslim-Jewish relationships, but also the way we talk about Muslims in France more generally.
Well, Maude, we've taken up a lot of your time, so any parting thoughts you'd like to share, and what are you working on next?
Oh, thanks. Well, since completing this book, I am actually mostly devoting my energies to being dean of the college at Brown University, so right now I'm not actually doing new research, but I would the next big project that's coming out is an edited volume on Jews and Colonialism, which is an outgrowth of that last book, and which I've co-edited with two other historians, and I think speaks to where a lot of the energy in the field of Jewish history is going right now, to thinking through how imperialism and Jews' place within it, how thinking about Jews' place within imperialism has challenged the ways in which we write and think about Jewish history.
Maud, that sounds like a great project. I want to thank you for being on the show today.
Thanks.
The book is Muslims and Jews in France, History of a Conflict, published in 2014 by Princeton University Press. The author is Maud Mandel. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time.